Welcome to ianellis.podbean.com. I'm your host, Ian Ellis, riding solo dolo tonight. Tonight's episode is smoke something, drink something, lay down and turn up. Don't listen to this show in the middle of the day. This ain't gonna get you through work, but have some smoke in your system, take a drink, go to a quiet place. You're gonna find it quite enjoyable. It's an audio experience for the mind. Marc Maron had a new special out on Netflix. Get excited. It's been about, I'm going to say, at least 5 years. Now, his last special came out at the peak of his career. It was right after the Obama interview. Hot as a pistol, TV show, Maron on IFC. doing shit with Netflix. Whatever that fucking gay-ass show is with the roller skate girls. He was in movie appearances. He's in The Joker. The Joker's a recent thing, but he started making movie appearances back then. I didn't think it was that good. I was worried that we had lost Mark. Mark is an interesting character, and I want to talk about him. The person he is on his podcast is a character that he's created. And my evidence for this is if you go listen to him on other shows, like Pete Holmes. There's one with a girl that's like my new best friend or some stupid shit like that. The name is probably wrong, but same time period as when he was on Pete Holmes. Chris Hardwick, I believe. When he goes on these shows and they address him as the character he portrays himself as, he's very defensive and very vocal about the point that he's on the other side of this shit. He's not nervous about it every day. He's figured it out. He's got it together. He's a normal human and he's fine. And then he goes on his show and he acts extra neurotic. That's an interesting thing about Mark. Something to keep in mind. His new special. It was exciting. He started by taking shots at Joe Rogan. I was so caught off guard, so excited, I actually clapped out loud for no reason. My wife and my toddler were playing on the floor. I had Marc Maron on. I heard that and I just started clapping. I was like, get excited. Shots fired. Something's happening. And I'm proud of him for that. But Mark is at an interesting place in his life. He's 56. So that means testosterone is tapering off. Estrogens is kicking in. And he's a bleeding heart liberal. Now, back in the 80s, there was a comedy boom. Comedy caught fire, and it was the most popular thing in the world. Hot ticket item. And comedy got co-opted, bought out, and played out. Every late night show was doing stand-up comedy. Every comedian was getting a TV show. And people got sick of comedy. And then it crashed. And people stopped going to the comedy clubs. Now, going into the 90s, there were the people that were still trying to ride the wave. And they saw comedy as a paycheck and a way to fame. And then there was this new group that saw comedy as an art form. And like it was supposed to mean something. You're supposed to have some integrity behind it. Like being a painter or a musician or some shit. This rugged group of individuals was Marc Maron as a head vampire, David Cross, Janine Garofalo, fucking Patton Oswalt, Mitch Hedberg, Doug Stanhope. These guys did something totally different with no backing and with a lot of hatred and blackballing behind it. They had to stand up for what the fuck they believed in, and they were about it. And it wound up, the people wanted it, and they all got to go on to be successful. So Mark and those guys, they had to fight to have their space. It wasn't easy. It wasn't handed to them. They couldn't just go walk out to an open mic every night. They had to, like, start bar shows. Comedy wasn't even doing bar shows back then. And now we're at the stage where their kids are taking over. And the kids are Cameron Esposito, Camille Nanjiani, whoever is your most sort of liberal agenda comedian. I'm not even going to say liberal, just your most agenda-driven comedian, where they're trying to get the message first. The message comes before the funny, which is the CEO's big gripe with comedy. He's like, when did it be cool to stop being funny? Isn't laughter what you're supposed to be after? And right now we're at an interesting time because it's at a real cornball stage where a lot of comics, and a lot, they do this thing where they just stop and try to give like a stump speech. They give you a message, and it's not really funny, and it's usually clunky, And it's usually meaningless shit that we all know and is pretty much common sense at this point. But they make a big deal out of doing it, and it doesn't feel organic. One of the strange things about comedy is, like, if you have an act that you do over and over, you're just always doing the same shit, nothing that you're doing is organic at that point. You can't cry twice a night, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, about an issue for 6 to 9 months, 2 years at a time. Can't tour on that. It's no longer legitimate. At that point, you're doing theater. You've turned it into a story. You've processed the feelings. You've moved past, but you're acting like you're being emotional. And it's disgusting. And it's the kids of the Marc Maron generation that they saw people have these organic moments in real life, and they thought that was amazing. And it was. And they want to imitate that. But their way of aping the style isn't to have their own original organic moments. It's to make this contrived, scientific, I'm supposed to do A, B, and C at this point. It's a tell. Are they genuinely talented? Are they talking to you as real human beings? Are they talking to you? Or are they just fucking, they doing it for a paycheck? Are they're trend riding. They're not fighting for their own space the way Maron did. So Maron, 56, testosterone is running out. Super, super liberal dude. So is Patton Oswalt and David Cross and Jeanine Garofalo. They're all like fierce feminists in the 90s, serious about their liberal shit. Now their kids are way more gangster than they are. Mark and them always had a way of being generally reasonable. At least that's how it seems to me growing up at the time. Whereas the new kids are kind of fascist. And if you grew up in the 80s and 90s, you know, you were hot off of World War II. That was your grandparents. Concentration camps. So anti-fascism was a strong message that was pressed into you. Care Bears and don't trust the Nazis. That was my childhood. Maron wants, he sees what's wrong with this. And he wants to say something. He's turtling. That's the phrase. He's sticking his little head out. He's bucking the system. He's going, listen, I'm a gangster. You ain't gonna tell me nothing. But he's beholden to pleasing these fucking kids, and he does this ridiculous bit about Harvey Weinstein's sexual assault shit, where he's like, just push it back to be like the third thought in your head. You can see he's so conflicted, and it bombs really hard. The audience is uncomfortable for him. The audience is uncomfortable, and I felt uncomfortable for him because I know they're not uncomfortable for the reason he wants them to be uncomfortable. They're uncomfortable because it's a clunky, awful bit, and it ain't working. And we watching you fail live on your Netflix special. Anyway, Marc Maron, everybody please go watch the special. He has a gangster in him. It's like there's a dragon locked up behind a cage. And he's doing his damnedest to still be the gangster and the gunslinger that he's always been. But I feel like he's not unified in his thoughts. Like, he's trying to please people he should also be bucking up against, and that's why it's not working. Because you can't please them because you're not actually on their side. You know better, Mark. I just wanted to put that out there. Guys, go watch the Marc Maron special. Check out Ross Dog. He's been doing Judgment Day. He's at war with Saiyans and Lemonade and all kinds of motherfuckers. With apologies on Sunday, CEO just got a new mic. I'm working with headphones last week. Reception was better, but my volume was super low. See if we can get it turned up this week, or else I got to continue on to buying my fourth mic apparatus to try and get this show up to a quality level. Tonight, you're going to hear some Buddha shit from Swami Vivekananda. I've been checking him out. I look at these guru guys the same way I look at comedy. I'm like probing. Are you gangster? Do you mean it? You mean what you say? Is this real or are you playing me? Is this for money? I don't want this if it's for money. I want you to mean it. That's all I ever want is I want you guys to mean it. Enos.podbean.com. Spread the gospel. Tell people to download this podcast. Deuces.
All right, but first, before we do that, ladies and gentlemen, your next comic coming to the stage, Ian Ellis. Yeah. Woo.
Ha ha ha. Oh, oh fuck shit. Me.
Oh, no.
The show's going on the road. I don't like cowards. Boo. Fuck them. Bunch of bitch-ass bitches. Dati. Anybody here support pussies? Anybody, that's what you're into? He ain't got no spine, won't stand up for shit, but I like him. Oh, he's a bitch. Ugh. That's cowards for you. Then there's good guys. Have you met them? On Facebook, the good men. Always got the right opinion. Well researched. They don't ever say nothing wrong. These guys are great. A lot of these good guys wonder why I don't like them. The reason is, I don't think they're good. I think they're cowards. I think they're a bunch of bitch-ass bitches. And they're just good because it's popular. There's no moral bent in them to be good. They ain't standing up to shit. That's how the Holocaust happened. All right, now's a great time for bigotry. Coronavirus going around, you can round them up. See a bunch of Asians go into a nail salon, just chain the door, set it on fire. Get away with that right now, being good. This is too much faith in a steady hand. I think people in charge should be nervous. Should be shaken. You're in charge. What? I think the president should have to do the job with a gun to the back of his head. Just start the presidency by taking the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge allegiance to the flag, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all. You guys didn't back me up on that, bunch of commies. And the second he doesn't follow that to the letter, just shoot him in the back of the head. Bow! And I'm down for having like up to five guys just waiting in line. Just ready to take over. That's what integrity looks like to me, a five-guy system. We just have an election every time one of them dies. It's too bad. He was doing pretty good there. I had to take that China money. Ugh. You guys want to make $1 billion?
Sure.
Here's what you do. You start a charity. And you say, 20% of this goes to victims of the coronavirus. There's a t-shirt. And the t-shirt says, Wuhan, China ain't nothing to fuck with. You buy that t-shirt, you can also help save the world. Just don't tell people that it's actually manufactured in China. You know what the thing about integrity is? It's not that hard. Like, it's rough, but you survive. Just like a breakup. You ever go through a breakup? Someone breaks your heart. Boo-hoo! Oh, you'll never be the same. Then you get past it, and you're fine. You do the same thing with integrity. It's all right to take a couple arrows. You'll survive. Take a knee. It's worth it. Mm-hmm. All right. My name's Ian Ellis. I love you. Good night. Yeah.
From the pot? Nope. Okay. Ian Ellis.
For president 2020. That's what I said.
Give it up for him. Come on. All right, your next comedian coming to the stage.
The ideal man is he who, in the midst of the greatest silence and solitude, finds the intensest activity. And in the midst of the intensest activity, finds the silence and solitude of a desert. He has learned the secret of restraint. He has controlled himself. He goes through the streets of a big city with all its traffic, and his mind is as calm as if it were in a cave, where not a sound could reach him. And he is intensely working all the time. That is the ideal of karma yoga. To illustrate, all great teachers have taught, resist not evil, that non-resistance is the highest moral ideal. We all know that if a certain number of us attempted to put the maxim fully into practice, the whole social fabric would fall to pieces.
Oh, shit!
In reading the Bhagavad Gita, many of you in Western countries may have felt astonished at the second chapter, wherein Sri Krishna calls Arjuna a hypocrite and a coward because of his refusal to fight or offer resistance on account of his adversaries being his friends and relatives, making the plea that non-resistance was the highest ideal of love. This is a great lesson for all of us to learn, that in all matters the two extremes are alike. The extreme positive and the extreme negative are always similar. When the vibrations of light are too slow, we do not see them, nor do we see them when they are too rapid. So with sound, when very low in pitch, we do not hear it. When very high, we do not hear it either. Of like nature is the difference between resistance and non-resistance. One man does not resist because he is weak, lazy, and cannot, not because he will not. The other man knows that he can strike an irresistible blow if he likes, yet he not only does not strike, but blesses his enemies. But there cannot be any question of renunciation in the case of the beggar who has nothing to renounce.
Oh, shit!
So we must always be careful about what we really mean when we speak of this non-resistance and ideal love. We must first take care to understand whether we have the power of resistance or not. Then, having the power, if we renounce it and do not resist it, we are doing a grand act of love. But if we cannot resist and yet at the same time try to deceive ourselves into the belief that we are actuated by motives of the highest love, we are doing the exact opposite. Arjuna became a coward at the sight of the mighty array against him. His love made him forget his duty toward his country and king. That is why Sri Krishna told him that he was a hypocrite. Thou talkest like a wise man, but thy actions betray thee to be a coward. Therefore, stand up and fight. Such is the central idea of karma yoga. The karma yogi is the man who understands that the highest ideal is non-resistance, and who also knows that this non-resistance is the highest manifestation of power in actual possession. And also, what is called the resisting of evil is but a step on the way towards a manifestation of this highest power, namely non-resistance. Before reaching this highest ideal, man's duty is to resist evil. Let him work, let him fight, let him strike straight from the shoulder. Then only, when he has gained the power to resist, will non-resistance be a virtue. I once met a man in my country whom I had known before as a very stupid, dull person who knew nothing and had not the desire to know anything and was living the life of a brute. He asked me what he should do to know God, how he was to get set free. Can you tell a lie? I asked him. No, he replied. Then you must learn to do so. It is better to tell a lie than to be a brute or a log of wood. You are inactive. You have not certainly reached the highest state, which is beyond all actions, calm and serene. You are too dull even to do something wicked.
Oh, shit!
If a man continuously hears bad words, thinks bad thoughts, does bad actions, his mind will be full of bad impressions, and they will influence his thought and work without his being conscious of the fact. In fact, these bad impressions are always working, and their results must be evil. And that man will be a bad man. He cannot help it. The sum total of these impressions in him will create the strong motive power for doing good and bad actions. He will be like a machine in the hands of his impression, and they will force him to do evil. Similarly, if a man thinks good thoughts and does good works, the sum total of those impressions will be good, and they, in a similar manner, will force him to do good even in spite of himself. When a man has done so much good work and thought so many good thoughts, then there is an irresistible tendency in him to do good in spite of himself. And even if he wishes to do evil, his mind, as a sum total of his tendencies, will not allow him to do so. The tendencies will turn him back. He is completely under the influence of the good tendencies. When such is the case, a good man's character is said to be established. As a tortoise tucks its feet and head inside the shell, and you may kill it and break it into pieces, and yet it will not come out. Even so, the character of that man who has control over his motives and organs is unchangeably established. He controls his own inner forces, and nothing can draw them out against his will. By this continuous reflex of good thoughts, good impressions moving over the surface of the mind, the tendency for doing good becomes strong. And as a result, we feel able to control the indriyas, the sense organs, or the nerve centers. Thus alone will character be established, then alone a man gets to peace. Such a man is safe forever, he cannot do any evil. You may place him in a company, there will be no danger for him. There is still higher state than having his good tendency, and that is a desire for liberation.
Oh, shit!
You must remember that freedom of the soul is the goal of all yogas, and each one equally leads to the same result. The difficulty is here. Liberation means entire freedom, freedom from the bondage of good as well as from the bondage of evil. A golden chain is as much a chain as an iron one. There is a thorn in my finger, and I use another to take one out first, and when I have taken it out, I throw both of them aside. I have no necessity for keeping a second thorn, because both are thorns after all. So the bad tendencies are to be counteracted by the good ones, and the bad impressions of the mind should be removed by the fresh waves of good ones until all that is evil almost disappears or is subdued and held in control and corner of the mind. But after that, the good tendencies have also to be conquered. Thus the attached becomes the unattached.
Nothing wrong with doing that.
We're recording. The pins are made out of plastic.
The pins are made out of plastic.
You're saying they're cheaply made?
What?
Are they cheaply made?
The other ones.
Can you give me one of those traps?
Oh my gosh.
Hey, I got a podcast going, so you're being recorded.
You're being recorded.
Hello. But feel free to join.
I'll join.
This is what you do for a podcast?
Sometimes. It's very spontaneous.
Yeah.
So, I'm standing over by my table. I see a hat with a Death Squad pin on it. All right. Death Squad means Joe Rogan's boys, Kill Tony, all that. I gotta get a picture of this.
Yeah.
Somebody has this? Nobody has this shit. Like, not a lot of people buy this shit. As I'm taking the picture, he's like, hey, man, you want to see, like, the tattoo? What? There's a tattoo. The tattoo is a microphone in the dates that he was on Kill Tony. Fucking special moments. So I wanted to get a podcast. Tell me about, like, to get a tattoo, this had to be something. What happened? Tell me the whole story.
What, the tattoo?
Tell me about, like, going up there, what it meant to you.
Well, Kill Tony is what got me into stand-up comedy.
So you started watching the show?
Well, I listen to podcasts.
Okay.
It's kind of...
Is the audio quality good or bad?
It's good. The issue is, like, there's a whole bunch of funny shit that happens that you don't get to laugh at because you're like...
There's a big thing going around that Brian Redband needs to be fired because his audio quality is shit.
Really?
Yeah.
No, the quality is good. The issue is, like, when you listen to a podcast, you don't get the visuals.
Video version is out there. So, you started watching the show, and you decided you wanted to try stand-up.
Yeah. That's honestly what got me into it.
And you made it on there two times.
Yeah, because then I just started being, like, a fanboy and just seeing when they posted it. And then they did their, what do you call it? They had a tour, like a summer tour, where they went out to the Midwest. And unfortunately, I was away, but I didn't know that they also were in Appleton Madison, Wisconsin. They went to, what do you call it, Milwaukee, but they said they hated it. They went to Chicago, too.
And Milwaukee is where Slipknot is from. So if you're in a Slipknot, you probably won't like Kill Tony. All right, so you made it on a couple of these live shows. You went and put your name in the bucket.
Yeah, I went.
And you had never done stand-up before?
So the Madison, Wisconsin one, I did stand-up like 14 times for that one. And that one went good.
Wait, so you're talking about their open mic?
Yeah, their show.
All right, so people that don't know, Madison has one of the greatest open mics in all of history because it's a packed theater and it's a college town and the room fills out. You'll have 300 people there watching you at an open mic. It's one of the most phenomenal experiences you could possibly have. So you went up there. That's a hard place to, like, you know, bust your nut and, like, it's a lot of people. And you did it. You braved it. You went through it. It went well. Kill Tony came out there. You made it up on stage. Yeah. Was that a big win for different people in the scene that got up there?
I think so, but, like, I didn't know anyone that was down there.
So how did your performance go?
So, really quickly, though. The thing that... It's like, Madison, Wisconsin's a really nice town. And, like, the people
are
just...
That's where you go to get pussy. Yeah. There's a lot of women.
It's just, like, a really, like... They're like... They're not stuck up.
Town.
They're, like, really, really nice. So you
we're
can get away with joking about, like, crazy things and stuff like that. But it's just, like, a nice, supportive town. And they're, like, they're more, like, theater arts.
They're down with
than
it.
Most towns
they're weird
in
and experimental. So how did your Kill Tony experience go?
My set went good, but...
How about the after interview?
That went... that was very interesting. That went very good.
What'd they say? Who was the special guest there that night?
There wasn't a special guest. They
right,
just
so
had
it was
the band.
Just Brian and Tony. Was no, Jeremiah Watkins
yes,
there?
Yes, Jeremiah was there, and so was Joe Bird.
Does Jeremiah strike you as being a petty person?
Petty?
He has anger issues?
No, why? Well...
There's these videos circulating around the internet that he's full of rage.
I don't know, man. He seems pretty
cool. You got
to
go on YouTube
no, you
and investigate these guys.
I don't think so, because like I talked to him after a show twice, and he's like really nice and calm.
So Tony and Brian, were they funny? Were they complimentary? How'd they
yeah,
treat
but
you?
They were really good, but Tony just kept telling Brian to shut up pretty much the whole entire time.
Like you didn't respect him.
I guess you could say that.
Some people say Tony's outgrown the show, but he hangs on to Brian because he doesn't want to be like disrespectful to the crew.
Well, Brian is, like, he's really good with the tech stuff. That's, like, his main job on the show.
I've never heard that. He's terrible at it. Some of the worst audio in the history of podcasting. And it's months behind Brian. All right, so your second time.
This
where
poor
were you?
Dude is just telling you about his
yeah,
experience.
Yeah, man.
I'm learning.
He's just like, I want to
know
everything.
I
got to
spit the gospel,
and then he's like, these people are fucking hacks.
Trash.
Fucking.
Do you know Tony's into S&M?
What's that?
Sex and bondage.
That's what I thought.
I could easily see that.
He married a chick from Australia. Met her on tour. She's a cokehead and was hanging around the comedy store looking for someone. Shacked up with him. Tricked him. Hoodwinked him. Turns out she's a S&M model. Tony's into being tight leather spanked. Did you know that about him?
No. I feel like you're a critic that no one likes.
He got your whole vibe within, like, how long y'all been talking?
I don't, not long.
Yeah.
I didn't even know we were doing a podcast.
You know
just
why
like,
they
we're
don't
gonna
like
go
me?
Outside and talk.
You know why they don't like me? Because I'm telling the truth. I'm interested in hearing from someone that, like, it meant enough to you to get a tattoo. Like, so tell me about the moment that you were like, this is fucking meaningful.
Just because it's when it started comedy. It's what got me. I had to get out of the house, dude, in, like, March and
change?
April this year. Huh?
You're an army guy. Did it help, like, get you back into the world?
No, not like with that. No, I had some shit going on with, like, my friend who I lived with and then my girlfriend at the time. And then I had, like, this issue at work where I lost part of my thumb.
Let me see your finger. It is shorter than the other one, but it doesn't look weird.
Yeah, that's the old.
Your finger looks totally fucking normal.
Yeah, here. I'll show you the real.
You have a miracle thumb.
I do. It grew back like perfectly.
How'd you lose your thumb?
At work. I used to work at a welding factory. Yes. And I crushed it. It's one of the jokes I tell on the set for that one. I was like, March was like the worst month of my life because
Jesus.
My girlfriend left me the same day my best friend kicked me out of
she loved that
the place
thumb.
I was living. And then I lost part of my thumb. But I don't know. I really like the show.
Well, I want someone to spit the gospel. Sell me Kill Tony.
Why
is it cool?
Because
I could be watching anything. Why am I watching this?
Mind you, he does watch it. He's been on it.
Yeah, of
course. And he's done the cartoons for it.
And he got a goddamn tattoo.
Yeah.
He bleeds this. So spit that gospel.
You worked with him.
I love Kill Tony because it's like... Because it was my introduction in stand-up comedy. Like, actually doing it. And I was like, I just got to keep doing it. And then... and then that's why I started doing open mics. I was like, I got to have something decent prepared for when I actually get on Kill Tony. Instead of just getting up there
trying to clean yourself up for the
shitting
show.
On the stage like so many people do, because they're like, there's a lot of people who do it for the first time in Kill Tony and they do amazing, but there's also a lot of people that just like eat shit.
So is that you're asking him for an interesting comedy story? Is that just the idea? Or you sound like you really don't care for Kill Tony.
You sound like you don't like it.
You're just like, oh, you like it, huh? Does it for
Tony
you?
Tony Hinchcliffe
it?
Owes me $300.
Damn. Okay.
This bitch ass motherfucker owes me money. So when I see the people that worship him, I wonder why. And I just want to make sure it's coming from an authentic place.
That's business. You should
get that in cash. I mean, I like Tony, but to me, it's more about the show.
You know he's a motherfucking lobster?
Star-starting rumors,
Here it is.
He's a reptile person.
Oh, Jesus, that's your thumb.